Thank you for joining us today. Can you please tell us your name and your qualifications to join us today at this tribunal?
My name is Charlie Massey. I have a doctorate in human ecology, which I did later in life at the Australian National University, the Fenner School for Environment and Society, which is very much an holistic approach to looking at the environment. So, and my other qualifications are as a farmer for over 40 years, where I've made a lot of mistakes, which woke me up to the fact that there was some major destructive elements attached to our pathway of industrial agriculture.
Thank you. Can you please share with us your thoughts and insights from the work you've done, the research you've done, the books you've written about the impacts of industrial scale agriculture on this place, on Australia specifically?
Yes, well, look, in the, as I say, in the course of 40 years management, et cetera, which then took me back to uni, I became more and more concerned about the impacts of industrial agriculture. And by that, I mean, and earlier speakers in your conference, such as Eric Hull Jimenez, would have covered this brilliantly in the commodification process and industrialization, particularly post-Second World War. But the shift to broad-scale monocultures, to high-level industrial inputs of fertilizers, weedicides, pesticides, to the genetic modification of plants, which opened a pathway for that dangerous herbicide glyphosate, aka Roundup, to get into our food, etc. It just became more and more alarming, and the costs it just mounted. And if we then look at the greatest ever contemporary challenge of any generation of humans, which is that we have now moved into the Anthropocene epoch, if you really look at the hard data on that, and I'm just down the corridor at ANU where I'm still a visiting fellow and lecturer to some of the senior climate and earth system scientists, if you look at the causal factors of the destabilization of those nine earth systems, it's not just climate, there's nine integrated self-organizing earth systems that sustain life on earth, and that's the planet where life itself created conditions for life. The major, in all, most cases, or a major driving factor of destabilizing of those earth systems is industrial agriculture, all but the ozone layer. So we're talking about not just climate and therefore ocean acidification, we're talking about biodiversity. We're in the sixth greatest extinction event in the history of Earth, this time caused by humans. Land systems change, freshwater use, the integrated phosphorus-nitrogen cycles and so on. Industrial agriculture is a major key player. And so that has all sorts of obvious environmental, but also human justice issues attached to it. And this conference is all about issues of earth justice and human justice. And a factor that's greatly overlooked is that one of the, aside from all those huge impacts on earth systems, there's a compounding and correlated collateral impact on human health. And again, what's led to the rise of wonderful organisations like La Via Campesina, et cetera, is a reaction to the injustice socially and health-wise, et cetera, of industrial agriculture. The key things I'd just like to point out is that once we move away from growing food off healthy soils and environments, and industrialise the process, we not only destroy localised food economies, regionalised food economies, but we destroy the very nature of the nutrient density and integrity and so on of the food itself. And this is having long-term consequences and immediate consequences on human health. So, for example, it's at university, I sat through two soil courses at university 40 years apart. They still mainly teach chemistry and physics, which is aligned to the industrial approach. And that industrial approach is saturated from the very top of our society to the bottom. So you've got the driving philosophies of neoliberal economic rationalism, subscribed to by our government in Australia and America, etc. That flows into policy for the government departments. It flows into university approaches in teaching agriculture. Departments of agriculture flow from that. Where, for example, most agronomists now have been axed and substituted by product salesmen from the big companies. And it flows right down to, as I said, agricultural colleges and farm extension. So that philosophy drives the whole thing. And the converse, alternate story isn't told. And what we're doing by denaturing our soils and poisoning them is killing off the very element, which is the healthy soil biology that accesses nutrients for human health. You know, nutrients we co-evolved for over millions of years. And I'm talking about nutrients, minerals, phytonutrients, et cetera, and there's a lot of evidence now around to show that this is having major impact on human health. And the evidence shows, for example, as we push the production of maximum producing wheats, go to the dwarf wheats, maximum response to fertilizer input, to irrigation, etc. Nutrient values are absolutely crashing, and the same applies to our fruit and our vegetables. The more you push maximum production, the more things crash. And really, we're seeing the demineralization, nutrient stripping of our soils. We're seeing unconscionable activities like CAFOs, concentrated animal feedlot organizations, with massive animal cruelty elements, with the complete prostitution of meat, instead of being healthy with diverse nutrients. It's now saturated with hormones and growth promotants and antibiotics and effluent problems and methane problems, the whole thing. We're also seeing, I've mentioned how our plant and animal strains are now more dependent on human inputs. And things like glyphosate, we now know it's penetrating our food. More and more evidence to show it's interfering with our gut microbiome and their amino acid production line for human health. And it's penetrating key defense barriers in our body, such as our gut lining, blood-brain barrier, and even placental lining. The evidence is just mounting by the day, despite the denials at the big end of town. The other thing, though, is, and this is a justice issue to do with human health, so let's put aside, which I'm sure you're discussing, the justice issue to do with the destruction of Indigenous societies, peasant societies. So that's sort of the front line of the destruction, as well as the earth systems. But this destruction of the food nutrient density in our soils is what you could call a hidden hunger. The knock-on implications of not having those nutrients in food, with all the flow-on of health impacts. At the same time as we've got a third of the world going hungry, we've got a large proportion of the industrial world eating these industrial foods that are nutrient hungry. And possibly up to 3 million nutrient, micronutrient deficient is some of the evidence. And that's really a hidden hunger. And an academic called Rob Nixon came up with the concept of slow violence. And this really describes our industrial, overprocessed, nutrient-bereft foods, which are linked to a wide spectrum of diseases. So this is happening out of sight, unacknowledged, undiagnosed. And to quote Nixon, what he means by slow violence, it's a violence that occurs out of sight, a violence of delayed destruction that is dispersed across time and space, an attritional violence that is typically not viewed as violence at all. And if we then want to look further, you've got concepts like epigenetics, the new knowledge in modern genetics, where it's not a change to the DNA and the expression of proteins, but it's a switching on or off on genes. We now know that this is heritable, and this is having huge transgenerational impacts, as the studies in Holland about the Dutch hunger period of the Second World War, which has had first and second generation profound impacts, which are epigenetic. So I guess to conclude all that, and some of the other social theorists that are writing powerfully about this, we'll talk about the thick legitimacy of this industrial world, that where industrial agriculture has gained its scientific legitimacy, and this has grown out of a web of legitimation processes in the scientific, the policy, the political, and practice and civic area. And it's just, it passes any credibility tests, becomes normal, it's a normalcy thing. And that's what has to be disempowered. And that's what's so exciting about the regenerative agriculture movement. It is both a political, a social, and an ecological challenge. It's turning us back to healthy food, recreating diverse local food ecologies, economies, and disempowering this massive neoliberal economic rationalist-driven system. So I'll leave it there, I think, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Charlie. Do you have time to talk a bit about what you see are some of the solutions in Australia specifically for turning around our agriculture system and returning to a sort of pre-industrial scale, chemical-oriented, corporate-controlled system? Can you talk in a bit more detail about, I guess, a positive vision for the things that are happening and that could happen?
Yes, so look, up to now, I've diagnosed the primal cause of much of the Anthropocene boundary disturbance and degradation of health socially and physically in society. But the news is really exciting. First of all, in working with Paul Hawken, and for example, on his work on drawdown, if you analyse, and he over 15 years, 70-odd scientists have analysed the 100 best methods to pull out carbon dioxide from the atmosphere or prevent it going up. If you analyse the numbers, and there's a number of regenerative farming methods in there doing all the same thing, and you collate them and call them regenerative agriculture. Regenerative agriculture is number one by nearly 240% better than the next nearest method of addressing the Anthropocene climate issue by pulling out and burying long-term carbon. So that's incredibly exciting. Then you've got the human health aspects. What we're now finding in Australia is it is entirely possible, both small and large-scale acreage, to grow healthy food and fibre without any industrial inputs. We can use biological inputs and a range of both ancient and sometimes new practices in cropping, in grazing, in agroforestry, in food forestry, silvopastoral approach, etc. And that's not without including the hugely important indigenous cultures, their knowledge of bush tucker and control burning, fire management, etc., which offers us an enormous capacity, I believe, to regenerating landscapes. So the solutions are out there. The hope is that, and some of these solutions apply to very much broad acre agriculture and cropping. The hope is that this drive with healthy food, it's sort of a two-step process. Once people start to shift to regenerative agriculture, they then see we have to link this healthy food with regional and local economies. So it's a pull back from just a focus on commodity exports, because you're now shifting from a bland monoculture commodities to individualised and diverse foods off diverse landscapes. And that's going to take time. And there'll always be a space, I think, for more broad cropping produce to go to other parts of the world that need healthy food in bulk. But it's sort of a parallel shift. Once you shift to regenerative ag, people automatically or eventually will lead to the conclusion that this healthy food has to be linked to healthy regional local societies rather than the continuing stripping out of population in country areas and and the social problems that go with that. So the potential of regenerative agriculture and our partnership with the urban consumers to demand the food and fibre coming off those landscapes is just enormous, and that's the exciting change agency that I think will drive change. And we can do it without the big end of town. We don't need them. We need to disempower them. And to sum up this whole discussion, that's what I call an underground insurgency. The solutions aren't going to come from the top. They're not going to come from the damn politicians, et cetera, et cetera, and their policy, because they're driven by the ruling paradigm of society. It's coming from the bottom, from your local food, regional cultures, and from the regenerative farmers. And we need this underground revolution. We need it to catch on fire, and it's starting to do that. It's a very exciting phase.
That is excellent. It's wonderful to hear, Charlie. Thank you so much. Just as one final question, in your work, in addition to the regenerative farming movement, what are you seeing in terms of Australians trying to embrace the plants and animals that already live here as opposed to the introduced species? Do you have any views or comments on a kind of upscaling of our own local food systems, and particularly the respect that's required for the systems that were here before 1788?
Absolutely, that's a really key point. We had over 65,000 years of skillful landscape management, over 2,000 generations that preceded the white industrial mechanical worldview. And that has to be tapped into and empowered, and just little things. Imagine if we had every national park in Australia where the fire management practices were run by Indigenous people, and that extrapolates onto private land. We run an annual burning workshop here every year with an Indigenous elder. But I can give you an example. Other than learning from broader landscape management from Indigenous peoples, I was recently over in Albany participating in the new regional Great Southern Food Network that's growing. And Western Australia has a new Minister of Agriculture, Alana McTiernan, who's trying to shift her whole department to regenerative agriculture. But this regional food hub program deliberately is interacting with Indigenous people, the Noongars and others, to feed in their range of bush tuckers. And there's two answers to your issue. Those of us managing broad grasslands and biodiverse country, we need native species with their ability to survive and tap nutrients, etc., to be regenerated. And then that's happening through ecological practices. But we very much need the local foods that are adapted to this climate and soil, and capturing the phytochemicals and the micronutrients and the nutrients. And that, to me, would open up huge potential to re-engage and revitalise Indigenous communities, get them back on country, and those that aren't, and to bring their knowledge. And importantly, any Indigenous people getting involved in the food culture, they have to be given ownership and proprietary control of that, because I can see the whole Western industrial system disempowering them once things like yam daisies or other bush tucker foods get going. This has to be, at the very least, a partnership, but certainly driven by Indigenous people to deliver these wonderful foods with their diverse nutrients. You still there, Michelle?
Yes, thank you, Charlie. Sorry, I had a small technical issue, but thank you for those final comments. We really appreciate your time today joining us pre-recorded at the Tribunal. We'll leave it there for now, but if the Tribunal panel has further questions for you as we compile our notes and our recommendations over the coming month, we'll get in touch again, Charlie. Thank you so much for your time.
That'd be great. I think it's a wonderful conference, and I wish I was there. So all the best.